Hi there. Before we begin, let me explain something. This 12-part series was made at WYSO, a small public radio station in Southwest Ohio. We had financial support from Ohio Humanities, but we relied on WYSO's staff and infrastructure to get the job done. We'd be grateful if you could make a contribution at wyso.org. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Chris Welter, and this is episode 10 of the Ohio Country Podcast, called Renewing the Miami Tribe.
Renewal is one of the themes of our podcast. We've met American Indian people determined to renew their language, culture, and government after their tribes dealt with government-sanctioned forced assimilation and boarding schools. Part of that renewal for the Miami Tribe of Oklahoma includes reconnecting with people and places in the state of Ohio.
The Miamia homeland was in the Wabash River Valley, what is now Indiana, Ohio, and Illinois, when Europeans came. The Miamia joined with other tribes, like the Shawnee, to resist encroachment on their lands. But in 1846, the Miami tribe was forcibly removed from Indiana. More than 300 Miami people were taken on canal boats south, on rivers and canals, to Cincinnati on the Ohio River, and eventually to what is now Kansas. Not long after that, they were moved again to Oklahoma. Today, their tribal headquarters are in the town of Miama, Oklahoma, and they own land in Fort Wayne, Indiana, too, with a thriving cultural resource center there. The Miami are unique compared to other tribes like the Shawnee and Lenape or Delaware, because a significant number of Miami people stayed in their homelands in northeast Indiana after removals.
Today, the Miami Tribe of Oklahoma has a fast-growing citizen enrollment. In 1996, the tribe allowed people who remained in Indiana to enroll in the Oklahoma tribe after the Bureau of Indian Affairs rejected their petition to be a separate tribe. Around the same time, the Miamia community began a robust language, culture, and education program, including summer camps for their youngest citizens. A lot of their success can be attributed to their collaborative partnership with Miami University in Oxford, Ohio. Tana Weingartner, a senior reporter at Cincinnati Public Radio and a Miami University graduate who's reported on the Miami Tribe of Oklahoma for years, brings us this story. You're listening to The Ohio Country from the Eichelberger Center for Community Voices at WYSO in Yellow Springs, Ohio.
And just a heads up, this episode talks about suicide about halfway through at the 17-minute mark. We'll cut in about a minute before the reference to it so you can skip over it if you'd like. And always remember, the 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline is the hotline for individuals in crisis or those looking to help someone else. To speak with a trained listener, called 988.
Miami University and the Miami Tribe of Oklahoma first met in 1972 when Chief Forrest Olds decided to drop in on the Oxford campus during a visit to nearby Cincinnati.
He knew that there was this university that shared a name with his tribal nation, and he was always interested in seeing it, and he happened to be in Cincinnati for another reason, and so he decides to stop in at Miami University. So this happens in 1972. The university is somewhat unprepared for that, obviously, and doesn't really know what to do with him. And so they take him to football practice and they take him around campus.
Kara Strauss is Miamia Center Director of Tribe Relations and a citizen of the Miami Tribe of Oklahoma. She explains what came of that surprise encounter is a 50-year-long partnership. They call it Napwandiange, learning from each other. Chief Olds returned to Oxford in 1974, and university officials started traveling to Miami, Oklahoma. In the fall of 1991, the first Miamia students came to campus. Three students enrolled in classes that year. By that time, less than 150 years since the tribe was forcibly removed from the Great Lakes region, the Miamia language was silent. The last fluent speaker died in the 1960s. There remained only a few words on bits of pages with no indication of how they were pronounced. Linguist David Costa started studying the Miami-Illinois language in 1988 and has worked extensively with the tribe on language revitalization. He discovered a huge trove of archival documents, including dictionaries created by French missionaries in the 17th and 18th centuries. He dove into the research, using clues from other Algonquin languages as a guide. Finally, he wrote up his dissertation on the language and dropped it in the mail to another person who didn't yet know he was about to help change the course of his nation.
Hiya, I'm Daryl Baldwin, Executive Director of the Miamia Center at Miami University.
Enter Daryl Baldwin, a citizen of the Miami Tribe of Oklahoma, born and raised in the Great Lakes area, with a passion for documenting and preserving Miamia language and culture. He and his wife Karen homeschooled their children for 18 years with a commitment to trying to revitalize Miamia language and culture at home. They'd tape Miamia words for household items to their walls and carry lists in their pockets. Once he met David Costa in the mid-1990s, their home project became a community effort. A few years later, the tribe looked to its growing relationship with Miami University to really expand Daryl's work. The university hired Daryl for a 3-year pilot called the Miamia Project. He was to create summer programs for youth and connect with tribal students on campus. He slowly grew that into a language and culture effort.
So what all does this partnership bring in terms of the tribe's development?
It started as a language effort with an understanding that our language is the most efficient and effective way of transmitting cultural information. However, language also has a community and cultural context. And in the context of revitalization, it became apparent to us pretty quickly that this wasn't just about language. And so we began to build out the effort in such a way to include a wide range of cultural and community building activities, traditional games, traditional art forms, ecological perspectives, traditional foods, all of those sorts of things needed to be part of this effort. And language was just the way that we communicate on a more deeper cultural level, how all of these things interact with each other and how it's kind of like the glue, if you will, to the culture. So it took us some time to understand the magnitude of what we were up against. The partnership with the university was very useful for us in that we had several years where we could explore this without being pulled into the academic environment. We were still being directed by the tribe, we still are today, and in that space that was created for us, we were able to figure out a path forward, bringing the university along with us. And what I mean by that is that throughout the entire course of this, we've been able to share what we were learning, the content we were developing on campus with students, with faculty, with staff. And that sharing process, I think, over time is what really started to solidify the relationship and make it meaningful on both sides.
How does it feel for you personally to see this evolution?
Yeah, so I used to do a lot of language and cultural education, and I do almost very little to none now. My role has really changed to be more administrative. That requires a lot of my time just in terms of management and oversight. I think and as difficult as that is for me, because that's not my love and passion, I do get a lot of satisfaction out of seeing a younger generation come along and to be able to see how the Miamia Center and our whole revitalization effort as a whole become a platform by which young Miamia tribe members can step into that space, both as a place for them to learn, but for a handful, for those who want to commit on a more professional level, long-term professional level, and actually, you know, give something more significant back to their tribal communities. To be able to build that platform in such a way that could support them has been really gratifying to me. And to see a whole new crop of even younger Miamia children coming up. I have grandchildren now. The resources that are available for the upcoming generation weren't there 30 years ago. And so I know that's going to have impact. So it's nice to see the growth. It's taken on its own life. It's gone way beyond myself and my counterpart, Julie Olds, who's the cultural resource officer for the Miami Tribe. the two of us were there in the beginning, and we finally reached a point where we can see light at the end of the tunnel and a clear path forward with people other than just ourselves.
Darryl Baldwin earned a prestigious MacArthur Genius Grant in 2016 for his work as a leader in Native American language and cultural revitalization. More recently, President Joe Biden named him to the National Council on Humanities. The Senate confirmed his nomination in October 2021. In January 2023, the tribe invited some 100 Miami University students, staff, faculty, and others to travel to Oklahoma for the annual winter gathering. It's a troop smaller groups from the school have been making now for more than a decade. But this trip was the capstone to a year-long celebration marking 50 years of partnership between the two Miamis. Tribal citizens gather from across the country. They live in 49 states, but gather here in Miami, Oklahoma, to be in community with one another. The crowning event of their gathering is a social stomp dance, open to all, with guests from neighboring tribal nations, too. The dancing and chatting lasts late into the evening, with men and women dressed in a mix of street clothes and regalia. There are lots of shirts and skirts embellished with lovingly crafted ribbon work. Among them is Miami University student Gretchen Spen from Fort Wayne, Indiana.
I am very fortunate because Fort Wayne, the Miamia name for Fort Wayne, is Kikayonge, and that's kind of the homelands for the Miami tribe. So I kind of grew up knowing that I was Miamia and having that cultural heritage and experience. And we actually, the Miami tribe hosts summer camps that are like intended to kind of teach language and cultural aspects to Miamia youth. And they have one of those camps in Fort Wayne. So I've really grown up since I was 10, knowing a lot of the, like a lot of my peers at Miami University went to these camps. And so I got to know a lot of the community members and begin to learn the language and stuff like that. So I've known for most of my life, and it's kind of cool to just kind of build upon that.
What would you want people listening potentially across the country that might hear this to know?
That is a very good question. I think one thing that through the Heritage Program at Miami, we learn about is that the Miamia community and our culture is not a thing of the past. And this coming to Winter Stories isn't like reliving the past. It's very much coming together as a community and celebrating us in the now. And so I think what I would like people to know is that Indigenous communities are very much thriving and alive. And I think people tend to think of that as like past tense, or like the culture is gone, now they're just, you know, of like the blood in the community, but it's very much alive. So yeah.
You guys are young. What do you see as possibly your role in the tribe, like leadership or if at all?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think for me, I think my role for right now, especially, is just showing up and participating and continuing to learn and spread what I know with people who don't have the same educational opportunities as me. And then in the future, who knows? I think because I'm one, sorry, not to brag about Miami again, but I think one of the things they really tried to instill in the students that go to like are in the Heritage Program is to keep it moving forward and keep the progression going. So I think, I don't know, I think I'm going to walk away with that and like that mentality of I'm going to learn and use what I know to help build my community.
Those camps and those friends Gretchen Spen talks about, those were outcomes of Darryl Baldwin's work developing the Miamia Center. She and others now learn and speak the language, create traditional ribbon work, tell refound stories, and are learning about their heritage. That whole effort became known as the Miami Awakening. More than 100 tribal students have graduated from Miami University since formation of the Heritage Award Program in 1990. Tribal students who meet university admission requirements are eligible to receive a tuition waiver. Along with the usual college classes, students in the Heritage Award Program take a one-credit-hour class each semester focused on themes about the tribe. The students gather weekly, not just to learn, but to maintain a connection to one another and the broader Miamia community. Back in 1846, when the Miamia people were forcibly removed from Indiana and Ohio, there were only 500 of them left. 20 years later, when the tribe was moved a final time to what was called Indian Territory, fewer than 100 adults survived. But now, the Miamia Nation is rebounding. There are currently around 6,000 citizens on the membership rolls, and the nation is growing and growing fast. The impact of the Miamia Center's work is reaching beyond the classroom.
My name is Kathy Carter Young. I'm from Crete, Illinois.
Growing up, Kathy Carter Young knew she was Miami. Her father, born in Richmond, Indiana, would take her to visit important sacred sites like Seven Pillars near Peru, Indiana, along the Mississinewa River. But something was missing.
I knew that we were Indian, but I didn't know what that meant.
What little she did know was based on so-called facts taught in school about Native Americans and how they were treated by white settlers. She says she had no understanding of how her ancestors were forcibly removed, not once, but twice, and the devastation it wrought. Then her son Ian enrolled at Miami University. As he learned Miamia culture and history, he brought those valuable and hard lessons home. Here she is speaking on a panel about the 50th anniversary of the two Miamis partnership.
Those heritage classes take our babies by the hand and tell them a story that's going to be very hard to hear. And not only that, we are going to help you know how to cope with that, because you've got to know the truth. Come on, guys. I am forever grateful to you.
Hi, folks. This is Chris Welter cutting in here. The reference to suicide comes in about a minute and a half. If you would like to skip over it, skip to the 20-minute mark in this podcast. The 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline is a hotline for individuals in crisis or for those looking to help someone else. To speak with a trained listener, call 988.
Carter Young talked with me about her experience reclaiming her heritage.
When did you learn your heritage?
When our son went to Miami of Ohio on the Heritage Scholarship and through the Heritage classes, That's when I understood that there was forced removal. We had our own Trail of Tears. I had no way of knowing that. So as Ian was learning the history, as our son was learning the history, then he brought it home, and then I was learning the history, you know, with him.
How did you feel?
It was hard. And I would tell him, now, you know, you're going to have to figure out a place to put that feeling. But the whole time I'm really telling myself, you're going to have to figure out a place to put that feeling. Because, you know, my grandfather had been orphaned at the age of 4. We suspected that his mother had hung herself 2 years before she, you know, died. Her sister died, you know, possibly the same way. It was a very difficult time. So you're getting this in bits and pieces. It's not like you're reading a novel and here's this chapter. It's a really tough chapter, but you're going to get through it. You are getting it in a little bit more spacing, you know, than that. But it really did stir up feelings that, you know, you heard this happening to other people, but all of a sudden it was your family that it happened to and you didn't know.
And then you spoke so eloquently about getting your language, learning your language.
Oh, yes.
What has that meant to you?
I think it's really, I will tell you that there's a coming out story that Jared Baldwin will say in Miamia and then in English. And you can find it on YouTube. It is sacred. And the first time I heard that, you saw I'm weepy, but I just wept. It was, It was a lost language. And to hear it spoken, even in story form, it's lyrical, it's beautiful. It almost sounds like spoken music. I can't even express that. It is spiritual. It is just, there's something almost magical about it.
Mehtame miam yake nipin gonje sa kachwe chike. E honje sa kachwe wache. Sa kiwe yonge itamenge. Nipin gonje newe yo sa chike muh ki chike. Pemetanach kwake sa kachwe lo iliti chike. Nehe sa kachwe wache. Nungin yahai minute chike. Nyanje machi ka chike. Minutene ne katangeke. Kaputu engote apoyata. Apoyata kwitakake meto.
I've taken, you know, the adult classes that the tribe offers, you know, as I've been able to do it, you know. And I enjoy doing it. My brain will just freeze when, you know, they come at me in Miami and I know exactly what they're saying, but I go, oh my gosh, what do I say back to them, you know? But it has been it's been a wonderful experience and I enjoy writing it, you know, like if I'm communicating with my Miami family, then I'm always, you know, throwing out, you know, terms, you know, in Miami. But I think it was that language renewal, that's the glue that has held this community together and has also been the thing to just like a slingshot, bam, the minute that we had our language back. I think that's what really propelled us forward.
You spoke about being able to name your family.
Yes.
In Miami. What was that moment like?
Oh, well, I was crying through it because the tradition was that, you know, you would bring names, you know, family names forward. So it really helped us to really kind of look, try to get that genealogy accurate. And then with the help of the language, see how that name, this is how it sounded, this is what they were really saying, you know, and be able to bring those names from way back and bring them forward to the next generation. It was wonderful. I mean, it was just really wonderful. And I think it was real, you know, so what I did was I named, you know, my four children, you know, our four children and then the grandchildren up to the age of 16. But it was just really a wonderful connection to the past. My name is Wapangekwa, which means white swan, and that was my great grandmother's name. And so her life was cut short at 22. You know, so then it's kind of moving that name forward, you know. It's just it's good. I mean, it's really remarkable. It was like being adopted and finding your family of origin and finding them with their arms open and saying, come on, we'll teach you everything we know about this side of your family. How wonderful is that? I mean, how really wonderful is that? So that's what it's meant to me.
Looking ahead, tribe and university leaders see continued success and growth as this partnership enters the next 50 years. The university's president, Gregory Crawford, sees more opportunities for Miami students and expanded research and development coming out of the Miamia Center to the benefit of both the tribe and the university. And the tribe's chief, Doug Langford, says other tribes and universities are already looking at this partnership and thinking about how it can be replicated. Langford says the key, the reason the Miamia Center and the Tribe University Partnership have been so successful is because it's unique, because it is a one-on-one partnership between the nation and the university. There are similar partnerships, but he notes there are usually multiple tribes grouped together, and every tribe is different and has its own culture. Chief Doug Langford, too, sees nothing but positives in the years ahead.
When I first met Daryl, I was working in the screen printing shop here at the tribe. There was no language. We didn't have any language. You know, we would go and participate every year at a few powwows. My parents always took me to those. you know, but there was no culture, there was no storytelling, there was no lacrosse, there was no ribbon work, there was no games. You know, we would get together basically once a year. And then this winter dance, one of my older sisters and another lady, they kind of come up with this brainchild, we need to have a stomp dance, and we're going to call it the winter one. And so they kind of started that dance. And that was one of our first social events that really kind of got started without the center. But everything else has kind of been built on being able to speak again and having classes, getting the children together. That was the biggest windfall, because that a lot of these kids that were kids when the camps began are now in working for us or working for the center. So we've grown our own, and they're culturally trained and knowledgeable. You know, unfortunately for us, a lot of our elders don't possess this knowledge. You know, they know what they have, what they were taught by their parents, but they didn't have a real cultural base of knowledge just because it didn't exist. We've had this has all been recently developed. And so, but this work just continues, you know, and the community just, they just soak it up. They can't get enough of it. The more we do, the more they want. And so, and that's the best part.
And how much of that should be characterized as having been done by, like, Daryl's work in the Miami Center?
Well, almost all of the language revitalizations are wholly due to the center. You know, without that work, we would be miles behind. And, you know, we would still be a community. We would still do things, but it would not be the same as it is now.
What is your hope for the next 50 years?
Oh, my. That's a... I can't even imagine where this would be in another 50 years. I can only hope that this relationship does nothing but grow as it has. And if it grows like it has, in my experience, the sky is the limit of the things we'll be able to do and what the university, the accolades they will get for the work they've done to help support a tribal nation.
The tribe's cultural resources officer, Julie Olds, you heard Daryl Baldwin mention her earlier. She has watched and participated as the partnership has flourished. She's Daryl's counterpart, he at the university, she at the tribe. And if that last name sounds familiar, it is. Chief Forrest Olds, whose impromptu visit sparked all we've just heard about, he would have a great-nephew who became her husband. Julie Olds perhaps sums up the two Miamis' relationship best using the metaphor of a mutually attended fire.
To keep our focus as partners, that's a commitment that we have to carry now and a responsibility we have now. But part of this work is also engaging the next generation to understand the importance of it, to be willing to pick up that wood and carry it to that fire and keep it burning.
I'm Tana Weingartner in Cincinnati.
Tana Weingartner is a reporter at WVXU and Cincinnati Public Radio. She attended the Winter Gathering in Miami, Oklahoma in 2023. The partnership between the tribe and Miami University continues to thrive into its 51st year.
In the next episode of The Ohio Country, episode 11, we will discuss tribal citizenship, sovereignty, and the concept of pretendience.
It's not our job to make non-natives comfortable. It's our job to nourish our cultures, nourish our people, ensure our children and grandchildren speak our language, ensure that our people have the rights to practice their indigenous religion that goes back millennia. It's not to be assumed. We are not a product.
That's next time on The Ohio Country from public radio station WYSO in Yellow Springs, Ohio.
This was episode 10 of The Ohio Country, called Renewing the Miami Tribe. It was written by Tana Weingartner, a senior editor and reporter at WVXU and CPR, Cincinnati Public Radio. Samantha Summer is the series editor. The cultural advisor is Dr. John Bickers, assistant professor at Case Western University and a citizen of the Miami Tribe of Oklahoma. Our logo was designed by Layla Troyer, also a citizen of the Miami Tribe of Oklahoma and a graduate of Miami University. Flawn Williams is the audio mixer and the composer is Evan Miller. I'm the digital producer, Mary Evans. To find photographs, maps, and links, go to wyso.org/podcast. This program is made possible through a partnership with Ohio Humanities, a nonprofit that shares stories to spark conversations and inspire ideas, and by the National Endowment for the Humanities, a More Perfect Union initiative. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in this program do not necessarily represent those of Ohio Humanities or the National Endowment for the Humanities.
To see visual content related to the Ohio Country, follow us on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and YouTube. And for a full transcript of every episode made by humans, go to wyso.org. The 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline is a hotline for individuals in crisis or for those looking to help someone else. To speak with a trained listener, call 988.
Hello again. Now that you've heard this episode, let me explain again. This 12-part series was made at a small public radio station in Southwest Ohio called WYSO. We had financial support from Ohio Humanities, but we relied on WYSO staff and infrastructure to get the job done. So we'd be grateful if you could make a contribution at wyso.org. Thanks.